Take your Bibles, if you will, tonight to 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13. I was reading about what some believe to be the smartest person outside of Solomon, or of course the Lord Jesus Christ, to have lived. Born in Boston in 1898, his name was William James Sidis, S-I-D-I-S. He made the headlines early, in the early 20th century. He was a child prodigy. His IQ was estimated to be 50 to 100 times higher than Einstein's. He could read the New York Times before he was two. I don't know why you'd want to, but he did. At age six, his language repertoire included English, Latin, French, German, Russian, Hebrew, Turkish, and Armenian. He was accepted into Harvard at nine, but they wanted him to wait until he was 11. And so he entered Harvard University as one of the youngest students in the school's history. One thing that was very unusual about Sidis compared to other child prodigies is that very few prodigies have multiple abilities, and yet he was gifted in mathematics and in language. He wrote his own language when he was just a young boy. But what did he do with all of that education, all of that intelligence? He took unskilled, low-paying jobs to get out of the limelight and to stay there. He used aliases to keep people from recognizing who he was. And someone said this of him: here's a man who has never succeeded at anything, but he's also never been a failure. What kind of summation is that? And so if you ask most people what they would say about Sidis, they would say he just didn't live up to his potential. He didn't accomplish what he could have. And I fear that many Christians fall into that same category. Not that it takes great intellect to do something for the Lord, I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is we don't live up to the potential that we have, the capacity that we have to serve the Lord. What is potential? Potential is really refers to the inherent ability or capacity for growth, development, or coming into being. It really signifies what someone or something is capable of achieving. I want you to think about that. Even if it's not been realized in your life yet today, what is the capacity at which God can use you? This evening, I'd like to preach on this thought: how to lose your potential. How to lose your potential. See, Saul, he's a king that had a great start. Just two chapters earlier, from chapter 13, you would see him defeating the Amorites. He mounts this army of 300,000. He devises a strategy and wins this great triumph. The people's response is to immediately coronate him as their king. And by the end of chapter 11 and going into chapter 12, Samuel has his farewell speech reminding the nation that their king, must be subject to the Lord. But I want to pick up the story here in chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 13, it says, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And so we see that Israel is this oppressed nation. They have a lot of enemies on every side at this point in their existence. As I said, they just had a major battle with the Amorites in chapter 11. Now in chapter 13, obviously it's the Philistines they're contending with. And the Philistines had conquered them, but they didn't have any intention of obliterating them and wiping them out. The Philistines simply wanted to turn them into their servants and subjugate them. And that's exactly what they did. Now, the Philistines had put these garrisons all through the land, and a garrison is simply a place that troops were stationed, or a fortress or a town was there to control it, to make sure that there was no insurrections in the land. And so you could think of it as just a little army outpost, and they would have these all through the land to make sure that there would be no uprising against them. And it was said that the Philistines would not allow them to have anything bigger than 3,000 people gathering at any one time to keep an insurrection from happening. My question for you is, was that Israel's plan, or excuse me, was that God's plan for Israel? Well, no, they were supposed to go and conquer the land. But notice what Jonathan does in verse 3. Look at verse 3 with me, if you will. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." We're going to find out what he says in just a moment. But Jonathan is operating by faith here. Saul has 2,000 people. Jonathan only has 1,000, but Jonathan takes a step of faith and he begins the attack. Listen, every time you see Jonathan, he is operating by faith, looking for the Lord's direction. He's going to do this again in the next chapter. But as we're setting the scene here, we need to see that Saul is not meeting the potential that God has given to him. He's not claiming the promises of God. He's not, and you can see in the very next chapter, what is he doing? He's just sitting around. He's just not doing what he should be. As a matter of fact, look, if you will, at verse 2 of chapter 14. Just jump ahead to verse 2. And Saul tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. And the people that were with him were about 600 men. Saul's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. Now, I want to talk about just two ways tonight. It goes on. We're not going to finish much more than that. But the first thing you must do in order to lose the potential that God has given you to serve him is to mismanage your clock. Mismanage your clock, the time that God has given you. Now, you may not know what a pomegranate is. I grew up with a pomegranate tree right in our front yard in Tucson, right outside of Tucson, a little place called Catalina on the north side of Tucson on the other side of the mountain. And it's a fruit with a very hard shell, and they have little seeds in there. I'm trying to think about what the size they are. Almost the size of a sunflower seed, but they're filled with this purple juice, and it will stain anything that it touches. And we would have pomegranate wars. You just take those things off. The birds would always eat half of those things, and you knew when you got hit, it's kind of like paintball, because you'd have splotches of different color, or not different color, but all those purple spots as you got hit by the pomegranates. Our pomegranate tree was not big enough to hang out under, so I don't know exactly what kind of tree they have in Israel as compared to what we had outside of Tucson, but it was a place that Saul could just sit back and relax, and the idea is he could just pluck something off the tree, and he is just watching time go by. He wasn't busy for the Lord. He wasn't claiming God's promises. He was waiting when he should have been warring, and as King Saul, he shouldn't have needed someone to be looking over his shoulder and telling him, okay, now is the time where you're supposed to go to war. All right, now is the time that you're supposed to go attack the Philistines, and let's do this next. No, he was the king. He was the one in charge. He should have been the one leading the charge. So when we think about mismanaging our time, one of the things that in order for us to get control of that is we need to learn self-management. That's a discipline. Talking about not needing someone to speak over your shoulder to tell you what to do reminds me of Proverbs. We're going to spend a little time in Proverbs under this point. Chapter 6, verses 6 through 9. I'm only going to read through 8, but we'll get to 9 in just a moment. It says, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways, and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest." Now understand that Saul is from an agrarian society. Solomon is from an agrarian society, and he is trying to come up with something to help the people to see what it should be like as a human being working even for other people. Saying that, you ought to take initiative. You shouldn't have to be told constantly what to do in the job that God has given to you. Now, the application for this ranges all the way down to the 3-year-old, all the way to the 103-year-old, okay? Because every one of us have responsibilities that we have been given. And there's not somebody that should be over us and telling us and pushing us and prodding us and getting us to do what we're supposed to do. Saul was kicking back. He was being lazy instead of being industrious. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. What happens to those that don't work hard like the ant? What happens to those that aren't collecting their meat in the summer? What happens to them in the winter? They starve. They don't have anything to eat. Now that's what Proverbs 12:27 tells us. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. Why? He was too lazy to go out and get something. But the substance of the diligent man is precious. Let me reword that for you. Video game addict has no groceries. But the diligent man has a pantry full of them. Proverbs 24 reminds us that the sluggard will not plow by the reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg in harvest and have nothing. You see, the lazy person, he doesn't like to be uncomfortable. It's too cold to work today, is what Solomon was saying in Proverbs. You know what it sounds like today? I couldn't practice my instrument because the house was too cold. My lips were too dry. My dog doesn't like when I practice. My piano is out of tune. There's never a shortage of excuses. One guy said this once, I can't go out today because I'm afraid I'm going to be eaten by lions. Now, I doubt that was quoted from a circus act worker, okay? Solomon used that as one of his proverbs to show us how ridiculous our reasons seem to be to others. In Proverbs 22:13, he said, the slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. That's exactly what he was saying. I can't do my homework because I don't have time. I have to catch up on my favorite podcast or read a book or the news, or I had time to hang out with friends or watch a video, and there's so many things that are calling my name that just really aren't that important. But yet we find ourselves hearkening to them, and we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. And what happens when that happens? You have somebody that starts barking at you, right? Where's this? Why didn't you do this? What happened to this? And what happens to our attitude towards that person? Why are they so mean? Why are they getting all over me? No, we're supposed to be like the ant that doesn't need the overseer to do what's supposed to be done. If you're responsible for meal planning in your house, if that doesn't get done, no one's going to eat. Or what they eat is going to be scarce, right? There's going to be pizza ordered a lot. There's a feeling in our culture that says I'm the victim. It's not my fault. I just ran out of time. So let me talk, especially to the young people, for just a moment. The real world doesn't care about your reasons, because all they'll hear is your excuses. You think they're reasons, but what people hear will be excuses. And your excuses are not going to get you a job or keep the job that you have. Excuses are not going to help you to accomplish anything worthwhile in this world. As a matter of fact, my Bible tells me that the excuse maker, the one that's not going to pull his or her weight, isn't going to have a job, not for very long at least. Proverbs 10:4 says, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. That word slack is very interesting. It carries the idea of an instrument, a stringed instrument that has a string that is just too loose. And so when you try to play it, it doesn't play right. You know, the truth of the matter is, there may be some under the sound of my voice tonight that just need to tighten up a little bit in some areas. Stop giving excuses and just get the job done. It might be time to take responsibility for those things that God has given you responsibility for. And whether you're 7 and you're just in charge of cleaning up your room, or you're 17 and you have some new responsibilities, maybe a job, or where you're 47 or 67, and whatever responsibilities that God has given to you, we need to make sure that we're fulfilling those and not spending our time underneath the pomegranate tree, not getting anything done that we should be. Now, I'm not against leisure, and there's a time to relax, and God has given a day of rest, and He's given us that pattern. But that day isn't every day that ends in Y. Not every day is a day of leisure and rest. There's a season of rest, but there's a season of working and sowing and planting and harvesting. And so I'm not against taking a vacation. I'm not against taking time off. We love to get away as a family, and those are good things. But there's no such thing as a permanent vacation. You have to have self-management. And then you know what else you need? You need sleep management. Late for class? Late for work? Late for a meeting? Is it because you overslept? Is it because you love your snooze button? Proverbs 20:13 reminds us to love, not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. Open thine eyes, and thou shalt be satisfied with bread. He says, if you'll wake up, that's the first step in fulfilling your responsibilities. Now, I realize, especially those of you that are taking classes, those of you that are in college, and fall break is a great time to catch up. Those of you even that are professors, you're able to catch your breath for just a moment. I understand that. But what I'm saying is we can be so busy that we think that, just 5 more minutes. I'm telling you, I don't know who invented a 9-minute snooze alarm. That's the most useless thing, because you almost get rest and it's just enough to annoy. Just get up when your alarm goes off. Just get to work. You see, if you ever want to get good at anything, you're going to have to put the time that it takes into that. And you'll never be good at anything if you sleep excessively. Proverbs 24:30-34 says, I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. The guy found everything else to do than to go plant his field. He said, I'm going to sleep in a little bit today. I'm going to take a nap, and I'm going to go to bed early. We kind of laugh at it, and we kind of joke about it, but the truth of the matter is he didn't get anything done. He loved his bed more than he loved his life in a real sense. If you're going to lose the potential that God has for you, then mismanage your clock. Don't learn how to manage yourself. Don't learn how to manage your sleep. Now, let me make sure you're balanced on that, because I don't want you to think I'm telling you to go out of here and try to live on 4 hours of sleep. That's not what I'm saying. There's a balance. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are being discovered because most Americans aren't getting enough sleep. And we survive on coffee or some kind of caffeine. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying sleep management is exactly that, managing the time that you have and allot that time to sleep. You don't have to feel guilty about getting a night's sleep, all right? But it shouldn't be something that we're always chasing after and that we love. All right, so we need to manage we need to stop mismanaging our clock. If we're going to lose our potential, then mismanage your clock. Not only that, but misappropriate credit. Look at verses 3 and 4 again, if you will. Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten the garrison of Philistines, and that Israel also was had in abomination with the Philistines. And all the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. Now, I don't know if you caught that. Who was it that smote the garrison of the Philistines? It was Jonathan. And literally, Saul was blowing his own horn here. He said, everybody listen to me. Look what I did. Maybe you've been in a situation where someone takes credit for something that you have done. I think that can be absolutely frustrating. There's no doubt about that. You know the pain, the frustration that comes along with that. But let me ask you this. Have you ever taken credit for something that God has done in your life? Moses made that mistake in Numbers 20:10. And Moses and Aaron gathered a congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear ye now, rebels, must we fetch water, or fetch you water out of this rock? Do you know that was enough to keep Moses from entering into the promised land? Oh, listen, Moses could have led the children across the Jordan. He could have shown them how to get victory, but he cut his ministry short. He lowered or lost potential service for God because he took credit for what God was doing. I want you to listen closely to what I'm asking you in these questions. Are you blessing people, or is God using you to be a blessing? Are you getting victory, or is God working in you to give you the victory? We ask questions like, are we winning souls? But I want to ask, is Christ using you to win souls? Are you giving your money, or is God funding his work through you? Now, you may ask, I don't really hear the difference. I don't know what you're saying different, Pastor. But the difference is the source. Who is it that's working? Who is it that's funding? Who is it that is providing the victory? And listen, we need to make sure our thinking is right in this. It is God that is at work. If we're not careful, the truth of the matter is our thinking comes across in our speaking. But if we're not careful, we'll start thinking that we're doing what God is doing. And we'll take the credit that duly belongs to him. You know, if taking credit was enough to keep Moses out of the promised land, I wonder what blessings we may be missing out on when we are taking credit for what God is doing through us. Saul was an absolute glory hound. I mean, think about this. Do you remember what happened when he went to battle just a couple of chapters later? By the time you get to chapter 18, David there is warring alongside Saul, and they come back. And in verses 6 and 7, this is what it says, and it came to pass as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the woman came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, with instruments of music. I mean, there was a great celebration. They had won this marvelous victory. And in verse 7, it says, the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands. How do you think that made Saul feel when he heard that? I mean, I think he straightened up just a little bit and he said, yeah, that's right. I slayed my thousands, but that's not where the song ends. And I know you already know where I'm going with this, but I want you to think about the shock and horror in Saul's mind when he heard the rest of it. As Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. I want to be a help to you tonight. If someone ever works for you or works alongside of you and does something that causes them to shine just a little bit brighter or to stick out in some way, petty jealousy or envy is only going to make you look smaller. Now remember, David didn't steal anybody's glory. He allowed God to use him to kill the Philistine. A true leader is going to distribute praise and hoard blame. You know what I mean by that? I mean, when things go well, you recognize those people who were key in helping you to be able to accomplish whatever task was at hand. But when things don't go the way you had hoped, you don't start blaming others. It's the leader's responsibility. During the production of the Model T, Henry Ford faced several challenges. Some of the times, the quality of the parts supplied by the vendors, and they would slow down the production. But despite these setbacks, he would often praise his engineers and the assembly line workers for their hard work, their dedication. Henry Ford publicly recognized his chief engineer, Chas E. Sorensen for his significant contributions to the production process. As a matter of fact, he credited Sorensen with helping streamline operations and efficiency, which were crucial to the success of the Model T, and it allowed him to lower the price and make that car affordable in that day. But when problems arose, such as those production delays I was talking about, or the quality issues, Ford would never place those on his team. Instead, he accepted the responsibility himself and stating that it was his vision and leadership that were ultimately at fault for any shortcomings, and he would take that right to the American people. One time there was a recall due to quality issues in the early production years, and Ford directly addressed the public, emphasizing that it was his responsibility to ensure the highest standards were met. I think it was Harry S. Truman. I'll have to go back and look. Some of you will probably have it Googled before I close my Bible tonight. But I think it was him that said, the buck stops here. It didn't go any further. He said, I can't pass it off to anyone else. I'm the one that's responsible to make the decisions. And that's true. Each of you has a sphere of influence. And making excuses or trying to pass the buck or stealing somebody else's credit is not going to help you. It's going to hurt the influence that God has given to you. So if you want to diminish what God wants to do through you, if you want to lose your potential, then mismanage your time. Some people wake up 20 years later like Rip Van Winkle, wondering where all the time went. I think this generation is going to say it's gone to screens. Mismanage your time and misappropriate the credit. When you do that, you are diminishing your ability to be used of the Lord. There's some things, and I think maybe we'll look at one or two things next week as the rest of the story unfolds. But I want you to understand, God wants to use you. And so, lest you leave here a little deflated, let me give you the positive aspect of that. Manage the time that God has given to you. And make sure that you give credit where credit is due, whether that's to God or to those that are working for you or working with you. But let's make sure that we're not hoarding all the praise and distributing the blame. Let's make sure that we're distributing the praise and hoarding the blame. All right? So that is a lesson in how to be and want to be used, on how not to be used by God. That was Saul's masterclass in that. So let's go ahead and take some prayer requests this evening.